Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Adi Oladipo here. Thank you so much for downloading Fight Night Extra. Remember, we're here every single Tuesday live on TalkSport to myself and the great Gareth A. Davis. If you can't join us live, remember to subscribe to the Fight Night podcast channel. So much other great content there as well, such as Fight Night, Fight of My Life, and even the Mike Tyson story, The Boy from Brownsville.
This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2.
If you love your boxing and you love your MMA, then this is obviously the show for you. Fight Night Extra, where myself, Adi Oladipo, and Gareth A. Davis, we're going to discuss all the latest from the world of combat sports. Today, we're going to be reflecting on a massive shock in Las Vegas as the biggest star in boxing and a man considered to be the pound-for-pound king, Saul Canelo Alvarez, was dethroned by Dimitri Bivol. We'll discuss where it went wrong for the Mexican. And if he bit off more than he could chew by moving up to light heavyweight, there has been talk of a rematch between the pair. We'll assess if Canelo should take it, and if Bivol really should move down to super middleweight and challenge for the undisputed titles there as well. A huge exclusive from Gareth over the weekend. Kell Brook has announced he will be retiring from boxing. His last appearance in the ring was his dismantling of Amir Khan. Remember, that was live on TalkSport. We're going to reflect on his career. And if now it is the right time to call it a day with potential fights against Chris Eubank Jr. and Conor Benn still on the table. Plus, we'll talk about a thrilling night in the UFC as Michael Chandler delivered a knockout for the ages, and Charles Oliveira proved he is the best lightweight in the world by some distance, despite losing his title on the scales. Look, don't go anywhere. This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2.
I don't know anything about Tony. Other than that, was the most vicious knockout I've ever seen.
It's been my life. This day has finally come, you know, where, you know, I've got to retire from boxing. You know, I believe that there's nothing else to gain from boxing. I've spoke to my family, and to leave the sport on such an high fight, what I've wanted for all them years. And it's hard, but there's nothing else for me to do.
Good evening, Gareth.
A very good evening to you, Adi. What a 3 weeks it's been, eh?
Crazy. An absolutely crazy 3 weeks. What's your highlight of all the 3 weeks? Is it still Serrano Taylor? Is that the one still?
Oh, it's very hard to call because that atmosphere at Wembley Stadium for Tyson Fury, even though it's a one-sided beating really for Dillian White in the stoppage, you know, for pure atmosphere, thrills and spills in the fight, you've got to go Taylor Serrano. And now for drama, you've got to go the last weekend. So it's a tic-tac-toe for me. One-armed bandit, jackpot.
I like it. It's funny you say jackpot, obviously, because obviously the slot machines were in full force in Vegas as well. A surprise? How much of a surprise? I mean, we've had some big upsets in the last 18 months in boxing. I don't consider it a huge upset, just because I thought Dimitri Bivol was a very good light heavyweight champion. But it's still an upset. Let's not pretend it isn't. How big of an upset, though, Gareth?
Well, when you add it all up, there's an old adage in boxing, which says weight divisions for a reason. And when you look at Canelo starting off at welterweight, really, world champion at light middleweight, that's 154 pounds, all the way up to 175 pounds. You know, he's naturally now as big as he can be.
Yeah.
When you think Bivol was probably 10 pounds heavier on the night as well, looked a much bigger man, very sturdy. Canelo couldn't put a dent in him. And also at the weekend, on Saturday night before the fight, had Craig Richards on live, you know, on Fight Night.
Oh.
And Craig was analysing the fight and he said, it's so difficult to get through Bivol's guard. Remember, the spider is a big, long, tall, 6'1" man. And he couldn't get through Bivol. And I was there that night in Manchester, obviously on the undercard of Natasha Jonas and Katie Taylor. And I think it was Joseph Parker and Derek Chisora too.
Yeah.
And Bivol just fought within himself. And Craig is a formidable physical presence. And he really broke down beautifully how it's really hard to get past Bivol's jab when he just wants to use a high guard and use that jab. So in some ways, it wasn't a surprise, but in some ways, it was a surprise. I've said all along since the fight, size, simplicity, strategy, and strength won that for Bivol. And what he made Canelo do to keep the alliteration with the S's or the sibilance with the S's going is he made him look sluggish because he yes. never allowed Canelo into the fight. It looked like a sluggish Canelo. It wasn't, in fact. It was a Bivol who was controlling the tempo of the fight. Whenever Canelo wanted to burst with some punches or go to the body, Bivol would snap him with a jab and move back. And I think his jab was very strong. And also, the output of punches from Bivol, who's not a volume puncher, completely dominated Canelo. Maybe it was an off night. It's only his second loss in 61 fights, of course. Or you can say three. You can say three if you think he lost to Golovkin the first time. But knowing Canelo, he'll want to come back and try and right the wrong. But it was not vintage. If it was what wasn't vintage Canelo, it was a subdued Canelo by the man from Kyrgyzstan and Korea, Korean parents of Russian residency, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, who actually made the night his own. And his name will forever be associated with this modern great Canelo.
Yeah, I think the surprise for me was just to see Canelo lose, I guess. you know, he hasn't lost since 2013 when he lost to Floyd, and you could, and you rightly mentioned it there, you could add in the GGG fight as well, which I thought he lost, but you know, officially he's only lost one fight in his career. So I think that's probably the biggest surprise for me, to see him lose.
Yeah.
And to lose quite comfortably.
Yeah, I can say actually that also talking to Craig, and I agreed with him on the show when he was on, we both said, I think Canelo probably wins by controversial decision, with most of us saying that we thought Bivol won the fight. And you have to applaud Tim Cheatham, Steve Weisfeld, Dave Moretti for getting it right. And look, I cannot remember the last time I saw three identical cards, identical judging cards. First four rounds for Canelo, two of those could have been 10-10s, frankly.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Or even one for, it was so close. I remember watching it 5 a.m. I was back here, of course. I'd come back from New York. Definitely Bivol won 7 of the last 8. There's no question about that. And I think he could have won one of those early ones. There were a couple of 10-10s there where they were really feeling each other out in a kind of phony war early on. But Tim Weisfeld, Dave Moretti, and Tim Cheatham, as I say, absolutely identical. So it was a kind of victory for boxing in another sense, wasn't it?
How much pressure were they on to make sure that they got it to gave it to the right man? Because we know Canelo's the king of Vegas. He's the pound-for-pound superstar. He's the biggest draw in boxing. They must have been under immense pressure to make sure that was correct.
Yeah, that was my lead story in the preview, was that, you know, all eyes on two men in the ring, but all the other eyes on the three men sitting around it. Because, you know, this was definitely Canelo's toughest fight for 5 years since that loss to, since the draw with Triple G. And, you know, I think in a sense it was a victory for boxing. I thought he took his defeat very well, by the way.
He did. He did.
And he's
I went to his after party. I went to his dinner.
Yeah. Yeah.
And still very relaxed, but you see him in the corner and everyone's talking to him and you can see that his mind is a million miles away.
Yeah.
He's already on revenge mode already. I wouldn't be shocked if he's already pounding the pavement, making sure that he rights the wrong. Apologies. And look, we're going to talk more about Canelo Bivol and what next. You mentioned Russia there. It's very interesting in terms of whether or not he can go down to 168 and fight for all the belts. We'll talk about that. You got an exclusive with Kell Brook last week. Kell Brook retiring. He called you up and said, look, Gareth, I want to talk to you first. What was his mood like in announcing this retirement, Gareth?
We'd spoken a couple of days earlier. And he said, look, I'm not in a hurry to do the piece, but I want you to write it. I want you to announce it for me, you know. So I said, look, I'll do it on the Telegraph. I'll do it on TalkSport. I'll break it together on the same day. So we broke it on the last Saturday, obviously. What was his mood like? It was funny, you know, because we spoke a couple of times. And then when we put the Zoom on, the Zoom recording on and the audio, when he actually said it out loud the first time, there was, his chest didn't heave, but he looked away for a moment. And it was the verbalizing that moment. He's had the conversations with Julie and Terry, his mum and dad, and he's had the conversations with his family, his immediate family. And I think he'd accepted it and wanted it. But to actually come out with it to someone he knew was going to report it and put it out there, it choked him up. Look, he's been doing it for 27 years.
He walked into
the gym from the little estate near Hillsborough as a 9-year-old, a very powerful mixed race kid who'd been raised by a white mum and an adoptive stepdad who had a wild side to him. Boxing gave him discipline, strength, lessons in life. He's no angel, Kel, and he probably won't still be an angel. I try to say to him, look, just try and do the 3% of your time as not an angel, but do 97% of the time as an angel. Listen, great career. It was a privilege to follow his career and cover it in detail, and a privilege to announce it, you know, that he'd chosen me to write about it. It was a great honor. Yeah. You know, it's lovely when a boxer does that for you. It's lovely when a boxer invites you to their house or whatever it is. So I think he's made the right decision at the right time, in my view, and I'm really glad he's done it. And, you know, when the piece went out and, you know, TalkSport put it out, the comments for Kel have been outstanding, and I'm so pleased. Because I'd like to talk to you. We debated it on Saturday night. Who has the better resume now, Amir Khan or Kell Brook?
Amir.
It deserves some discussion.
Yeah. See, I paused, didn't I? I didn't go straight there because I had to think. I thought because that Sean Porter win away from home against a very live Sean Porter deserves a lot of respect, even to push Errol the way he pushed Errol. So even these defeats have been good defeats. I mean, he fought peak GGG, not the GGG coming up or the GGG on the way down, literally the best version of GGG, and gave him hell for a couple of rounds. But we might have a debate on this one. It's a good one. It really is a good one. Did you think that Kell was going to retire prior to you getting the call from Kell? Did you think it was going to be one more?
No, I thought he'd take a fight with Chris Eubank Jr. on Sky and get $1 million for it or whatever and just say, oh, I'll go in there and do one more. But I'm really pleased he hasn't done that. Look, he could have gone in there. Kell knows. Kell doesn't know. He would have believed he'd have beaten both Conor Benn and Kell and Chris Eubank Jr. But there's a part of him, as he said in the interview, my heart's not in it anymore. And once a boxer says their heart's not in it anymore, I'm so pleased when they walk away, because I hate nothing more. I say hate is a very strong word. I dislike it when a boxer has been told by all around him that he can still have one more, he can fight for that world title one more time. And he goes in against someone and there's nothing there for three rounds. Yeah. They just take a beating.
Yeah.
And we're all disappointed, not least them. So I just think he's chosen to do it at exactly the right time. And he's gone out on his terms. Mm. And it'll never get better. We were there that night. I mean, well, it's never going to get better than that night now.
No.
And besting this guy or beating this guy, dominating Amir Khan, a guy who he's been in pursuit of for 10 years. Let's have that debate later on in the hour about whose resume is better between Amir Khan and Kell Brook. It's very, very interesting.
It is. It is interesting. You're right. And I'm more than happy to have it with you. I will be Team Khan. You can be Team Brook on this one. Yeah. UFC on the weekend as well, almost been sandwiched in between all the boxing that's going on. A couple of big title fights, or what they were supposed to be, but obviously Charles Oliveira lost his title on the scales, but still absolutely dominated Justin Gaethje. Well, look, we're going to have a debate about Oliveira and Khabib Nurmagomedov soon. We're really going to have that debate at lightweight, because I think if there's anyone that can do him, it is Khabib coming back, but we'll have that debate. Carlos Esparza beating Rose Namajunas in what was a dull fight. And Michael Chandler with the upkick, knocking out Tony Ferguson. A good UFC run as well.
Absolutely. You know, great event at the weekend. Obviously, a highlight reel from Michael Chandler. It's what he produces. It's normally with his hands, not his feet.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of, I don't know if I'd call it the teep kick, but it was a kind of up kick, front kick, wasn't it? Brilliant moment. And he said he hadn't trained it. The photographs of Tony Ferguson afterwards. God. You know, it just shows you the
force.
The force of these things and what it does actually to the body in a moment in time. And it's worth remembering how inherently dangerous the sport is. Tony Ferguson's fourth loss in a row. I know we'll go into this in more detail, but he looked about 120 in that photograph, didn't he? He looked 120 years old. He looked like he's going to look when he's 90, basically, didn't he?
100%. And you know? I mean, I'm a big Tony Ferguson fan. And
look, oh, me too.
There were times when, you know, that Khabib fight would have been fantastic and it was on, off. The defeats are starting to scare me. The way in which he's losing now is starting to scare me as well. Look, still talks well, still seems very coherent with his words, but I am a bit concerned for Tony Ferguson. For Chandler, though, that when he got on the mic and started calling everyone out was fantastic. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. Grab the mic and almost WWE promo it. And he almost stole the show because of that, Chandler.
Yeah, it's weird, you know. I mean, when I covered Michael, I knew him, you know, I've been to Hawaii with him. I've been all over America with him, you know, when he was fighting and was champion in Bellator. You know, he's a fantastic character. You know, him and his wife is a doctor. You know, they adopted an African-American child, a beautiful family. They're absolutely, I've met his parents. He's a wonderful man. But I think since he left Bellator for the UFC, he's used the platform to really promote himself a lot more. You know, he was loved at Bellator. He's a long-standing champion, you know, such an entertainer in there. He's a mini Mike Tyson, isn't he?
He really is, isn't he?
With
he
a
really
bit of wrestling is. Thrown in. He was an amazing wrestler at college, of course. So, an amazing moment. Like you say, did the right thing. Should fight for the belt again. And, you know, thoroughly deserves it. But also, you know, calling out Conor McGregor and said, I'll go up to 170 if I have to. And that was the clever move. Because by saying, I'll go up to 170 to fight McGregor, that's the moment where you go, yeah, that appeals to McGregor now because he's going to fight a much smaller guy at 170 and not have to lose a ton of weight. Brilliant move.
Brilliant move indeed. All right, you're listening to Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2. Still to come, we are going to be chatting a bit of Bellator with Gareth as well and reacting to that special KO we just spoke about from Michael Chandler in the UFC. We'll also hear from Kell Brook after he announced his retirement. But up next, look, only one place to start, and that's the big shock in Vegas. We're going to be talking at Dimitri Bivol's beating of Saul Canelo Alvarez. You're listening to Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2. Myself, Adi Oladipo, the great Gareth A. Davis. All right, big shock. Yeah, big shock. Semi-big shock on the weekend. Dimitri Bivol retaining his WBA light heavyweight strap against Canelo Alvarez. All three scorecards, 115, 113. Let's get into it, Gareth. Did Bivol win the fight? Did Canelo lose it? You know, like people like to say when a favorite loses, we try to dissect and why the favorite lost as opposed to why the underdog in so many people's eyes, and I thought the favorite going in for me, really, Bivol won.
Yeah, look, Bivol, you cannot write off it. His, as I say, size, strength, stamina, strategy, superior in every department, really. Certainly in the boxing department. You know, high guard, strong jab. Canelo, I suspect, was looking to come strong late in the fight, as he did against Sergei Kovalev. But Kovalev was a lot more washed up as a light heavyweight, was there for the taking, cherry picked at that moment, I think, by Canelo
Agreed.
And his promotional team. And In this fight, Canelo met a very live champion at the peak of his powers, right at the right time, with a massive amateur pedigree, very tough man, underrated. And I think there's a danger always in fight sports, because it does revolve around hype and promotion, that there's this indestructibility about Canelo, that this incredible aura he's got, that he can beat anyone. This ridiculous talk of Alexander Usyk going into it. I mean, it was ridiculous at the time. I keep coming back to it. There's nothing stronger here than saying there's weight divisions for a reason. It's as simple as that. Mm. And you can only step up so far. And in history, you know, when Thomas Hearns and people like that stepped up to super middleweight, and when Roy Jones Jr. stepped up and then he couldn't come back down again, weight divisions affect people. You know, you look back in time and it's never been any different. And I think with greater athletes now and stronger athletes, you can't get past them. And here, Bivol was a fortress.
Yeah.
And that's how he fought the fight. And in the rematch, if there is going to be one, Canelo needs a different strategy. I didn't see a plan B and a plan C and a plan D from him in this fight. I just think they thought he was going to take it late and he was going to get to him. But the truth is, Bivol got stronger and stronger and Canelo ran out of ideas.
Yeah, look, I went to the post-fight press conference and Bivol barely had a mark on his face. The only marks he did have, and this is what I wanted to ask you, it's a tactic that Canelo started to use, and I haven't seen any other boxer use it, where he targets the arms. What is that about? He did it with Callum Smith, and we saw how that affected Callum. He tried to do it with Bivol, and Bivol even post-fight pointed it out and said, look what you tried to do to my arm, Canelo, but it wasn't going to work. I haven't seen that before. It's a weird strategy that he's doing. It almost should be illegal, but obviously it's not. It's allowed, but it's a weird one.
Yeah, but it deadens the arm, doesn't it? Mm. They get dead arms. It makes the arms drop more. It makes them heavier. It makes them... You don't have the same sensations in your arms. Mm. It's an old tactic. But also, you know, he wants Bivol to move his arms more because he wanted to get at the torso, but he couldn't.
Yeah.
That high guard was there the whole time. And whenever... Canelo looked like he was going to attack. He looked slow. Bivol pushed out the jab and retreated. And then when Canelo dropped his hands to rest, he came in, didn't he, through combinations. And Canelo doesn't mind taking punches. That's the funny thing about him. It's going to have to be a very different strategy. It's going to have to be a busier Canelo who gets started earlier. I mean, it was a very slow start to the fight. First four rounds for me were very slow. The punch output was slow. There was a lot of feeling out, almost too much. Mm. But I don't think you're ever going to get a toe-to-toe war with Bivol because he's going to box you.
Too smart. He's just far too smart.
Reminds me a little bit of an Andre Ward, you know. Very. The way Andre Ward did things, you know.
Very. Like, he's a thinker. You're watching him. Like, there was times when Canelo was on the rope saying, come in. And Bivol's like, no.
I
don't need to come in. I've got longer arms. I can stay on the outside and just pepper you.
Yeah.
Eddie Reynoso, I spoke to him after Canelo's trainer / manager, and he said Canelo his legs were gone after round four.
Doesn't surprise me.
Were gone after round four, and I don't know if that's a case of putting on too much weight.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was, but yeah, he looked tired. Always going back to the ropes, and it surprised me. Look, let's talk about the rematch. Let's kind of park Gennady Golovkin now for September, because it probably will be Bivol. If you are Canelo, Bivol said he would go down to 168. Do you accept that? Or do you say, no, I lost at 175. I want to try and go again at 175.
Well, we've got the issue politically of the fact that WBA, of course, for whom Bivol holds the 175-pound light heavyweight belt, allow its Russian, Belarusian athletes to defend their titles at the moment. They can't carry the flag into the ring. They can't have the anthem. But the other three, sanctioning bodies, WBC, WBO, the IBF, do not allow those guys to fight at the moment. Certainly the WBC don't. So that's a difficult scenario. So it might not be for all the belts. But I don't think it matters with Canelo because it's such a big fight. Mm. You know, he's still widely considered right at the top of the pound for pound list. He's earning $50 million a fight. This is an even bigger... It's an even bigger fight now, the rematch.
Yeah.
So that probably does take place in Las Vegas in September. Whether they think differently and they go for Golovkin first and then they do Bivol afterwards is a thought as well.
What would you do? If you're Team Canelo here, You're his management. What do you do? Do you say, okay, let Bivol fight the winner of Joe Smith Poturbiev because that's just too much for us, and let's get Golovkin? Do you do that?
If they can fight Bivol at super middle and they can make Bivol boil down, and he's not a massive light heavy, it's a bit like Joshua Buatsi, just carries the weight, doesn't have to put on a lot or take off a lot.
I
take it at super middleweight with him. I think that's a really good plan. He needs some advantages. He's just gone up to face a guy who probably in the ring wasn't 175, but was close to 185, 190, completely rehydrated. I don't know if the official morning weights were put out there at all, but I'm sure Bivol was a lot heavier than him.
Oh, much bigger. And let's be honest, Canelo's a 160 guy.
Yeah.
I mean, Canelo's undersized at 168.
Yeah.
He's fighting a guy in Bivol who, you're right, 190, maybe 190 plus come fight night. You mentioned top of the pound for pound rankings. Is Canelo still your number one pound for pound?
Yeah, I think at the moment, I think so. Yeah. And I think what he's got to do is go back to super middle, fight Bivol at super middle. If Bivol can get down, then he's going to agree to it. He's a massive payday for Bivol to fight Canelo a second time. And also is David Benavidez down there at super middleweight, who Canelo's got to fight. And that is a brilliant fight. That is going to be the kind of fight that Canelo wants, toe-to-toe war. And he's got to do it now, because he's going to start to decline now. We might have seen the night that his decline began Saturday night. He's been very active. So I think that's where it all sits, really. But it was a great night. Mustn't forget what Bivol deserves. But we still have to applaud Canelo for wanting to challenge himself, for pushing the limit, and wanting to create legacy in everything he's doing. He's still an amazing champion.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely amazing. And you think of what could come. You mentioned Bivol or GGG in September. You mentioned Benavidez. Jamal Charlo's out there as well. And you know he's going to want those. He's going to want all of them. So look, I still think pound for pound number one for me by a gap. I know Terence Crawford's announced that he thinks he is now. Not for me. I think Canelo still is because he's the undisputed champ at 168 who dared to be great and challenge an unbeaten light heavyweight champion. All right, you're listening to Fighter Extra on TalkSport 2. Still to come, we are going to be getting the latest from the world of MMA. A massive night in the UFC on Saturday as well. And a big, big fight night in London for Bellator this Friday. We're going to hear from Michael Venom Page. But up next, we're going to hear from Cal Brook after he announced his retirement from boxing.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Kel doesn't need it, and he'll assess it in the next couple of weeks, and whether he has one more or two more, I don't know.
Most fighters, you know, the sport retires them. You know, I'm retiring from the sport, you know, on a serious high.
Just absolutely battered. Kel Brook, 10 months of inactivity, and it's over in around 4.5 minutes.
Brook is the toughest opponent that Crawford has fought.
Correct.
The toughest opponent.
Cal Brook does it!
has made a triumphant return to the ring and in front of his Sheffield fans. All of the
lights. They get fireworks, they get chocolate brownies, they're going to get drama, they're going to get wobbly legs from him. It's all going to be happening.
And the referee has stopped it, and Kell Brook has won this battle of bad blood. The longest running feud in British boxing has been settled, and it is Kell Brook who is hoisted onto the shoulders of his trainer, Dominic Ingle.
Oh, goosebumps, goosebumps. Every time I hear that Kell Brook walkout exit song, it gives me goosebumps. You are listening to Final Extra on TalkSport 2. Myself, Andy Oladipo, the great Gareth A. Davis alongside me as well. Kell Brook announced his retirement on Saturday. He spoke exclusively to Gareth A. Davis. This is what he said as to why he's called it quits from boxing.
It's been my life. This day has finally come, you know, where, you know, I've got to retire from boxing. You know, I believe that there's nothing else to gain from boxing, and I've spoke to my family, and to leave the sport on such an high fight, what I've wanted for all them years, and you know it's hard, but there's nothing else for me to do, you know, and gain in this sport really.
You told me a couple of days ago that you know your heart's not in it, even though there's still lucrative fights out there. People have been talking about you and Conor Benn, you and Chris Eubank. The heart's not there.
My heart's not there, you know, for it. You know, what I put into training camp, how much that's all I've ever wanted on my resume. You know, the grudge match with Khan, won the world titles, being in them big fights. And, you know, my heart's not really in it anymore. You know, I'd be doing it for wrong reasons.
Oh, Kell Brook, I can't lie to you, Gaff. It must have probably give you my top five favourite British fighters. So I'm not saying best. Favorite British fighters, I'd have to have Kell in there. I've loved Kell for the longest, and that's probably why I get so passionate talking about him. That's probably why I've said some bad things about him, just because I think he's at a stage was so good. I wanted to see those fights in America against Keith Thurman, Danny Garcia. I wanted his name to be in the equation for a Pacquiao or Floyd fight. And look, for whatever reasons, it didn't happen. You mentioned earlier that maybe, you know, and he'll be honest with himself, didn't live the best of lives sometimes, but by God, he gave me some entertaining nights. And when all of the lights came on,
yeah,
when that walkout music, I still say to now, there isn't any better in the UK. There isn't any better, but I'm happy that he's called it quits as well.
Look, 43 fights, only three losses, and those two middleweight great, Gennady Golovkin, two weight divisions above, and then pound for pound welterweight stars, Errol Spence and Terence Crawford. And that Terence Crawford was that Errol Spence fight was brilliant until he smashed his orbital socket. Yeah. It was a brilliant fight. Two amazing practitioners, former welterweight world champion. For me, he'll be remembered as a very, very deeply skilled practitioner in the ring, physically powerful, with a clean, punching, efficient style and command of range and timing. Now, that command of range and timing, think how defensively savvy he was because of that, and how his output was so efficient.
Yeah.
That victory to win the IBF title in 2014 in Carson, California, it was an amazing night. Made him the first British boxer, by the way, a little great stat here, the first British boxer to take a world title from an undefeated American on US soil since Lloyd Hunnigan against Donald Curry in 1986.
Wow.
Even as late then as 2017, the Ring magazine considered him the best welterweight in the world. For me, his resume is absolutely phenomenal.
Here we go.
You know,
but it is.
Yeah. And I think what is brilliant for him is that he's gone out at the right time. So he'll always be remembered, not for the Terence Crawford loss in Vegas. He'll be remembered for the bravery of stepping up against Gennady Golovkin, which was a fight too far. We talked about weight divisions for a reason today. He will always be remembered for that amazing night when he dominated Amit Khan for six rounds and can walk away, and he's got the bragging rights historically and in terms of his legacy now. So I think he did it exactly the right time. My argument for Kell over Amir Khan is I think I know they were welterweight and light welterweight at their very best, respectively. Mm-hmm. But I think from 2014 onwards, I would always have favoured Kell to beat Amir, particularly from 2016, 2017. It's 10 years since Amir Khan was a world champion. 10 years. I think he beat Lamont Peterson. I think that was wrong on the record. Mm-hmm. I think he beat, I was there that night. I think Amir won by a round. But I just think, not in terms of perspective as a British Pakistani Muslim who did amazing things for the community, societally, for GB at the Olympics, but for his wealth and his resonance with several communities, his following, the things he's done, his charity work. But in pure boxing terms, I think Kell is the better all-round boxer with a greater legacy in the ring.
Oh, okay. Okay, that was interesting. I was with you as an all-round better boxer. I think Kell's a... I just think Kell is just an 8, 9 out of 10 at everything. He just seems to... But as a legacy, I'd have to give it to Amir. I think Amir's got better wins on the resume than Kell. I think Amir was... Where Kell dipped, unfortunately, maybe it's managerial-wise, but where Kell dipped after the Sean Porter win, Amir Khan had back-to-back really good fights, win or lose. I think the Marcus Maidana fight was just absolutely epic, where he looked like he was out on his feet, I think, in the 9th or 10th round. And that win now looks better and better because of what Marcus Maidana did. The win against Paulie, Zab Judah, Devin Alexander, Luis Collazo, solid, solid wins. Katelnik, which I think we forget about, was an absolutely ridiculous
Marco
win.
Antonio Barrera.
Barrera as well. So as a boxer, I'd always favour Kell over Amir, but in terms of putting their CVs down on paper, I would have to give it to Amir. I thought Amir at one stage was the best 140-pounder on the planet, and that's at a time when Timothy Bradley and Devin Alexander were there. I think he was that good. So I'm going to go Amir just over Kell.
Yeah, it's a great debate, and it will go on forever. And you're right. But I think later in his career, I think Amir went on for too long, basically.
Yeah, he did.
He just went on for too long. And he was never a welterweight, a fully-fledged welterweight, in truth. He, amazing hands, but defensively, he never mastered the skills of being on the ropes, which he needed to do at times, and be evasive. You know, and also, again, credit to Amir. And, you know, I love the bones of the man. I mean, I really do. I do. I've always loved Amir. You know, he's an amazing person. I think, you know, defensively, I'd like to have seen him improve a little bit in his career. But in terms of attacking verve and heart and warrior spirit, particularly that Maidana fight where he took a battering for 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
How that didn't get stopped, I don't know. I was there that night. It was like a butcher chopping up a piece of meat at times in that round. It was the 11th round, 10th or 11th round. I remember he put Maidana down with a body shot in the fight as well, back in Vegas. Yeah, amazing. Two amazing characters. We're not surprised to get a call from Amir soon that he's announcing his retirement as well.
30 seconds left on this one, Gareth. Did Kell underachieve?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. There was a period, that period, you're right, that period between 15, when he had the machete attack, and he came back in 15 and had it 15 months of three fight. Jojo Dan and
Frankie Gavin, I think it was.
They weren't. He should have gone on then. That's when he should have gone on. Maybe gone up to light middleweight, you know.
Maybe. So,
Maybe
he should. But look, Kell's retired, fantastic career. And it's weird because as much as we say underachieve and Gareth...
That's Wright, a compliment.
It is a compliment. Exactly. Yeah, I'm happy you said that because most boxers, 99% of boxers would never have a career that Kell's had. We just thought he could have done a bit more.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
I think Gareth's probably going to get a call from Amir in the next couple of months retiring as well. And it'll be nice, Gareth, I think, for you to go on tour with both of them. I think you'll be such a good almost conductor.
On that last point, Kell said the darkness has left him towards Amir. He'd love to sit down, have a coffee with him and a chat. And I said to him, we'll be on stage with you two.
100%. They'll do tours all over.
Of course they will.
We've seen George Groves and Carl Froch do it. Exactly. They'll do it as well.
Ben all and right, Eubank, all of them, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Eubank and Ben, et cetera. And next up, we're going to switch our focus to MMA. We're going to recap UFC 274. We're going to hear from Michael Venom Page as well, head of Bellator. This weekend, interim title fight for Michael Venom Page should have been the real thing. We'll discuss why that isn't. Welcome back. You're listening to Final Extra on TalkSport 2. Myself, Adi Oladipo, Gareth Davis. So let's switch our attention, as I said, now to MMA. We're going to start by looking back at UFC 274, which happened at the weekend. You feel like sometimes when there's a big boxing bout like there was, UFC sometimes gets lost. But it was a good card. Let's talk about, you know, there's two title fights, or one title fight, because Oliveira obviously didn't fight for a title. Let's talk about the non-title fight, though. I want to talk about Michael Chandler, someone that you know very well, Gareth, from your time working with Bellator when he was there, and he was one of the stars of Bellator. That upkick of Tony Ferguson. Now, we've seen a few good upkicks in the UFC. You think of Anderson Silva versus Vitor Belfort. You think of Lyoto Machida versus Randy Couture. This was another good upkick, but I almost expect it from those two guys because they're karate and kickboxing experts. I don't expect it from Michael Chandler.
Yeah, it's interesting. He doesn't tend to... It's his big right hand and his left hooks, isn't it? And a hard jab and his wrestling now that always comes to the fore when you think of Michael's style, mini Mike Tyson. But, you know, what you've got to remember about the... when those guys are in the moment and they understand the range, he'd worked out the range there. I mean, it was a terrific fight. Ferguson looked brilliant up to that point, to be honest. Yeah. You know, it was a fairly even fight. And, you know, like you say, I was there when Anderson Silva knocked out Vitor Belfort with the front kick. And I was there when Lyoto Machida scissor kicked Randy Couture, knocked his tooth out that night. I think Randy was about 45 then. I think it was in Boston or somewhere. I remember being there working on TV for the UFC at that point. And, you know, what you got to remember is a kick carries more power than a punch.
Yeah.
So because that the whole motion of the leg coming up like that, it's like the worst uppercut you could ever have with a punch. and because the force of the bones in the foot on the chin are so powerful. We've seen it. It's lights out time. And that's what happened, of course, to Michael Chandler, where he saw that moment and he just did it to Ferguson. And the photos will be there forever, where Ferguson's, it looked like his face and the skin on his face had been rearranged to make him a 90-year-old looking man. It was an incredible moment. Never, it's one of the great knockouts, and it propels him into massive fights now.
Yeah, it does. You wonder, obviously, with Oliveira now being stripped of the title, and we'll talk about that in a minute, there is a vacant title there, and you wonder if he's going to be one of the people that are pushed in to fight for that vacant title. He called out everyone. He called out Conor McGregor as well at 170, as you mentioned, which is interesting because Conor's itching to come back, and there's, I don't think, going to be a 155 run for Conor unless it is a title fight. He might want 170, and let's be honest, Usman will ragdoll Conor. He's just too small. Chandler, he'll look at, and Conor will think, oh, you know what? I can sort of weight bully this guy a bit. So it might be the fight Conor gets when he comes back.
Absolutely. Funnily enough, I didn't realise, but I'm not a follower of TikTok, but my interview with Conor McGregor is doing big numbers on TikTok from a few years ago when he was the interim champion. And we went back and forth and he said, no, I'm the champion. I said, no, you're the interim champion. And it just made me realise that with Conor now, he's got to the point where he doesn't need a belt. No. Doesn't need to fight for a belt. He's such a big figure. Him and Chandler, 170 pounds. Conor's probably 190 pounds at the moment, something like that. Yeah. There's no way he's going to lose 35 pounds to get back to lightweight at 155. Loses 20 pounds, gets a great training camp. Everybody would be thrilled with the fight with Chandler. They all know there's a chance Chandler's going to knock him out as well. But Conor's brilliant stand-up, southpaw, evasive kung fu, karate style, stand-up fighting style would be brilliant against Chandler. It's a brilliant matchup of styles. It's one the fans would love. Chandler's going hunting for the knockout. Million pay-per-view buys. That is the fight to do, in my view.
Yeah, I like it. Let's quickly talk about Tony Ferguson. That's another big defeat for Tony Ferguson, a knockout defeat as well. This is a guy that I think was one of the best, it was between him and Khabib, one of the best lightweights in the world a few years back. It's tough for him as well because he did, I'm sure you've probably seen the interview where he goes in on UFC and Dana White. And if you've got to do that, you've got to back it up with a win. Once you lose and you go in like that, there's problems for you. What next for Ferguson?
Well, as you say, for who'd have thought in 2019 when he beat Donald Cerrone that he'd lose to Gaethje, Oliveira, Beneil Dariush, and Michael Chandler in a run and never fight Khabib fight Khabib, you know?
Yeah.
So, a man who he waited to fight for so long. You know, I think what we've got to do now is just make sure that Ferguson is mentally well. You know, he's had his dips, his ups and downs in recent times. And like you say, he's rattled the brass there. He's scraped the brass of the UFC by the things he said. So maybe he does go and do a bit of boxing now. Maybe they do release him to go and do a bit of boxing, you know, or maybe he does go and play baseball that he was phenomenal at when he was younger. But it's a time of reflection for him. And 0-4 doesn't work in the UFC, unfortunately. But it wouldn't surprise me to see him popping up elsewhere. Bare knuckle fighting, Bellator, Professional Fighters League, you know, PFL.
There's still something there, isn't it? I mean, like
he's marketable.
Yeah, and before the knockout, he was doing well.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's still a good fighter there. That I agree. Yeah. I think there is a good fighter. Talking about good fighters, I mean, we need to have a discussion as to where Oliveira sits in his pound for pound rankings with the UFC right now, because I mean, he missed weight, and look, Justin Gaethje, we know how good he is. He ragdolls him,
yeah,
and then submits him. I mean, honestly, if you have told me 2 years ago Oliveira's run's going to be Poirier, Ferguson, Gaethje, Chandler, I would have laughed at you. I said, there's no way he's going through that murderer's row. No way. And he's done it.
Yeah, he's really improved his stand-up, hasn't he? That's the thing. He's got range now. We know he's got kind of anaconda-like skills on the ground with his Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and that was proven, of course, on the night. But like you say, Kevin Lee, Tony Ferguson, Michael Chandler, Dustin Poirier, Justin Gaethje, over 3 years, hasn't lost since he dyed his hair blonde, remember?
Yeah.
Charles Dubronx, and he really is Dubronx. He's a tough guy. Listen, I remember covering him years ago, Addy, when he used to come to the prepping point for the UFC Octagon and take his glasses off to fight. He used to walk in with his glasses. He's an extraordinary talent. He's come late in his career. Pound for pound, got to be in the top five. Just on current form, top five.
Yeah, I agree. And some people might even argue a bit higher. All right, let's switch our attention to Bellator. It takes place this Friday. Main event is Michael Venom Page versus Storley. Interim title fight. Gareth A. Davis caught up with Michael Venom Page and started asking him, do you feel like you've been underappreciated in the UK?
Not at all. That's an easy, kind of an easy answer. I don't believe I get the recognition I deserve. But it doesn't faze me. Like I still do this for me. I still enjoy what I'm doing. I've loved every bit of my journey. There's been bits where, you always look back on that, maybe I should have done this or made that choice and so on and so forth. But that's just life in general. But I'm still happy with where I am. Do you know what I mean? I'm still happy with, I still feel like I'm improving even in the mixed martial arts world. My status is slowly growing, 100% it could be more, but it will come. It will come, I'm sure of it.
That's a great question, Gareth, I think, because I think he is underappreciated. I really do. I think he's got a personality. I think his style of fighting is absolutely fantastic. I remember when he was coming through early and there was that comparison with Anderson Silva, and he was like him. He was like him, if not a bit more of a mover than Anderson Silva. And I feel like we haven't really got behind MVP as we should. It is Logan Storley this weekend. Oh, sorry, Friday, apologies. It was supposed to be Yaroslav Amosov, who, we speak about all the boxers that are doing their thing in Ukraine, Lomachenko and Usyk and the Klitschko brothers. Amosov's over there as well, fighting for his country. So that's where Logan Storley's come in. What do you think of Logan Storley as an opponent?
He's a good opponent. Obviously, he's renowned for his wrestling. He's 13-1. He's very strong. He's going to try and shoot against Michael Venom Page. He'll probably get hit by a knee in one of five different ways. And, whenever I talk to Michael, how chilled out Michael is. He really is one of the stars of the combat sports world. That's why I went in on that story. I've just penned a column for BBC Sport on it about him, actually. And, a regular column I do with them. The key is with Michael, we talked about whether if he'd been an Olympian, for example, in freestyle kickboxing, if it had been an Olympic sport, and he'd perhaps got the recognition in Taekwondo or that Lutalo Muhammad has got and been a world champion and a gold medalist, Michael wouldn't be in the position he is financially now. He's earning very well. He hasn't got widespread recognition. And it's a fascinating subject because he's it's as enigmatic as the fighter himself, in my view. But he's a natural star of the sports firmament. He's got a unique style, endless highlight reel stoppages, and command of the moment in promoting himself. And there are parallels here with Michael Chandler. Like if Venom Page went over to the UFC, they'd try and match him with Israel Adesanya. They'd push his promotional hype. And I know exactly, you start to think about those fights. A fight with Anderson Silva, for example. All these kind of things. Whereas, I think Bellator should have been pushing a fight between him and Raymond Daniels, who's one of the great stand-up fighters of all time. And he's the poster boy here for Bellator MMA in the UK. But Michael is savvy enough to know, and as he told me, MMA is still a very, very new sport, especially in this country. And I'm quoting him here, and still looked at negatively in some places, like with sponsors, for example. So we have to keep striving to develop things. I think he beat Storley on Friday night. And I think he considers himself the champion if he wins that. And remember, only Liam McGeary in Bellator in 2014 and Michael Bisping 2015 and Michael Bisping in 2016 are the only two world champions we've ever had in the major MMA leagues in the world.
Can you get me a ticket for Bellator this Friday, Gareth?
Of course I can.
Thank you very much. I'll be with
see you there.
Thank you very much. We'll see you there indeed. Gareth, as always, my man, thank you very much. This has been Final Extra on TalkSport 2. A big thanks to Gareth A. Davis.
That's it for this week. Thank you so much for downloading our Fight Night Extra. Remember, we're back every single Tuesday for more great content. And if you miss us, make sure you subscribe to Fight Night to catch up on all our other episodes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.